Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's big strong, play guitar in here.
Up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green and the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. Paul Daner Jr., Richard Skinner here with me, your Bengals beat writers for Team Inquirer. Fresh off of our trip back from Indianapolis yesterday, and boy, that game didn't go as the Bengals hoped.
No, but the bacon was good in the press box.
You know what? I didn't want to have to do this immediately, but I've never seen such inconsistency
in bacon
from one tray to the next. Very unbelievable. Perfect crispy bacon
on the first.
So what do you do when you have a good run of good crispy bacon? You go back for a second.
You do.
And I went back. Wasn't as crispy. It was. It lacked the flavor and the taste.
See,
disappointing.
I can eat my bacon either way. I'm a big bacon aficionado. The best part of when it's not quite as crispy is the fat tastes better.
Yeah.
It has a better. The other way, it just kind of gets lost in the crunch. This makes it a lot better.
No, is what bacon's all about. No, I won't fight you. I'm not going to really have a debate about this.
Let me just tell you, either tray of bacon had a better day than the Bengals had on offense or defense.
Or defense, yeah. That's true. Both of them far more satisfactory. I mean, just an epic fail day. Cool. We have plenty of time to get into that. But you know what? I like to hearken back whenever I'm going looking back. I hearken.
That's an old man saying. I'm not going to lie to you.
I'm hearkening back.
All right.
Hearken back to
days of yesteryear, like 2005.
Yes. We're actually just going to hearken back to last week.
Yeah.
When we heard Marvin Lewis say about four or five times, it's a big week. This is a big week. Just a big week. We heard it over and over again. And it really was. To not be old guy, switch from old guy to young guy, I loved some of the advanced numbers and some of the 538 mm-hmm. analytics. And we talked about this a little bit. Not on the podcast, but just last week in general, about the 538 piece that came out where they looked at playoff probability percentages by game, and they came up with this very ridiculous formula to how they come up with it. I trust it's all legit. but they came up with a way that they judge how your percentage chance to make the playoffs changes with each game in a week, and they had every game for this particular week, and they'll do it for the rest of the year. And it had the Bengals, I believe it was the most or the second highest percentage swing between win and loss of anybody in football, because it's Indy, a team that's expected to be in the playoff picture. It was a game in the middle of the season where you've got a lot of things at play. It was a 19 percentage point swing between win and loss. So now the Bengals go from having a 71% chance now to down in the 50s of making the playoffs. I mean,
well, and part of it is you now don't lead the division any longer.
No. Nope.
So in theory, you don't control your own destiny there, even though there's a ton of football left to be played. You still are on. Actually, they still would be a wild card team as of today, but you are on the cusp of that, barely hanging on to it. So yeah, the flip side is you win, you're 4-1-1, and you still lead the division. You have the third best record in the AFC at that point, or actually second best record I think you'd have had in the AFC, because San Diego lost, And Denver would have been the only other one-loss team in the AFC, correct? So, I mean, think about that. That's a huge
difference.
Swing.
The huge difference in how you would feel coming off a win in Indy versus a loss, and then not just a loss, a complete dismantling, is...
That's like five losses
it's night
in
and
one.
Day. It's night and day compared to where you could be to where you are now. It's a huge slide. So, I mean, here's the thing, though. We can sit here and talk about, oh, the record and the playoff... All that stuff really doesn't mean anything. The bottom line is, over these last 3 weeks, and particularly yesterday, this team has had a number of issues that were lingering exposed dramatically, because that's what good teams do. They find whatever your weaknesses are, and they exploit them. And this team has been exploited. So I want to let's launch our conversation here for all of you that are listening to this from...
And gnashing your teeth.
They're listening probably while standing on top of the Roebling, considering a dive after the...
No, considering throwing Marvin Lewis off.
no doubt. He's probably the first one they would push. Let's start there. What of what has happened over the last 3 weeks, let's broad stroke this, has you most... concerned in the big picture of this season?
The run defense, starting primarily with the defensive line, because I'm not sure what the fix is. I tried to get into that with Marvin today. He didn't want any part of it, and that's okay, because I'm not sure that they really have a fix for it at this stage of the game. I mean, you know, I asked him, can you bring more people at the line, and he thought I was crazy. I knew what I was asking. I don't think he did, but that's okay. You know, you either are going to get off blocks with your front four and free linebackers up to make plays, or if they're continuing to get blocked and people get to the second level, you're just not going to make tackles. That to me, what's going to change there? Ray Malaluga was not very good as a middle linebacker. Okay, he didn't play. Vinny Ray, it didn't change much there. It starts with those guys up front. It really starts with your two tackles, and neither one of them have been very good. And people can scoff at the Pro Football Focuses of the world, but those two guys are the worst two rated run defenders on this football team. It starts with those two guys.
They on the line.
And what changes at that position, Paul?
That's just it.
Brandon Thompson will help some.
Brandon Thompson is a run stopping defensive tackle, but he's a reserve portion of the rotation.
Correct.
He's not going to come in and play 75% of the snaps.
Or maybe he has to. I don't know. Maybe he needs to. But you're right.
If he got healthy and played fairly well for a week or two after coming off, maybe you would consider upping him and make Pecco a 50-50 rotation. But to me, that's an at best as far as a contribution comes.
Right.
If you get somebody back, I mean, the reality that this team would all of a sudden have Brandon Thompson come back and be, you know, insert the Haloti Ngata, is ridiculous.
It's not going to happen.
That's not what's going to happen. The bottom line
is the fact that
they have defensive line across the board issues, and you're right. There's no fix. You have Gilberry has played fairly well.
He's been good.
Carlos Dunlap.
Gilberry's a guy. What he does? He does his job. And I know that sounds simplistic. He's a guy that, you know, if probably the coaches are asking him, you do this responsibility on this play, I guarantee you he does it 95% of the time. That doesn't always require him making a tackle. So I give a little bit of a pass to. Dunlap has been like a freaking roller coaster, man. He's been good on some plays. He's been awful bad on some plays.
He had a great half the first half yesterday. But, you know, he will get thrown around a bit in the running game as well. We saw a lot of that yesterday. I mean, he can be a fantastic pass rusher, but as far as, you know, really affecting the game and blowing up runs, we haven't seen as much of that from him this year as we've seen in the past years. And Geno Atkins, we've been through this every single week, is just not
Geno Atkins. Getting better.
Get this, Skinny. Yesterday, Geno Atkins played the most snaps, I believe he's played all year by percentage. 70%, 55 snaps. He didn't.
Paul, tell the people what he recorded in those 55 snaps.
He's not even on the stat book. He's not even in the stat book. Not a single statistic. Not an assist.
Not a tackle.
Not a tackle.
Not a hurry.
Not a hurry.
Not a sack. Not a nothing.
A zilch from a guy making $55 million and playing defensive tackle. Now, you listen, to think that he is suddenly going to be old Geno in 2 weeks, that he's figuring it out, you know, I just think it might be time to give up on that thought, because
it may be this whole year that he's just going to play like
it's
this.
It's going to be the year where he's just not the same.
And you see it, not to use a bad baseball analogy, but you do see it in baseball. I mean, Guys with the Tommy John, it takes a long period of time, and they may work their way back.
Guys with ACL in football. I mean, yes, it's outside of Adrian Peterson.
It takes a while to get back.
You see that? You see it takes. It's typically was always known as a 2-year injury,
right,
where you have 1 year where you're just back trying.
So while
to get
we
together.
Are crapping on Geno,
it's
somewhat,
not.
We do
it's
understand.
It's not a personal indictment,
no,
but it's a reality that this team has to figure
right,
out
correct.
Right now. And that's how the heck they're going to stop the run with no answers showing up, with Geno Atkins' ACL going to continue to be what it is, and with Domantas Peko not doing much of anything.
And with Vontaze Burfict continually knocking himself out of football games.
Yeah, and even when he's in there, not play, not right. being Vontaze. I mean, it's just what's happening with this defense is bad news
okay,
for everybody.
So and I guess I tried to ask more of that. So what is the fix?
I mean that's the question. That's the question that I'm asking everybody, because I just don't know what it is. You have a team.
Do you sell out more people to stop the run? Do you?
No.
I mean that's the big part of it. Is that what you have to do? To just say it doesn't matter what it takes. We're going to put our corners in man coverage until we get this thing stopped. Until we get teams in down and distances that we are comfortable with. And if they hit us with a big play, they hit us with a big play.
It depends on who you're playing. Eventually, the thing is, that's gonna get exposed against any kind of a good team. You know, I mean, I think you could maybe do that against Joe Flacco and the Ravens, and we hope for the best.
You could do it against Joe Flacco. You could certainly do it against Jacksonville. You could certainly do it against Cleveland.
Yeah,
I mean, so there are some teams coming up here you can do that against. You could probably do it against Pittsburgh as long as you helped a little bit with Antonio Brown. You certainly can't do it with Denver, but I mean, I think there's some teams you can do that to here coming up, and maybe that's what you have to do.
But what is that? So you can't. Okay, so let's run that theory. So you can go ahead and do that, and
that's the only way you're going to stop it.
But at the end of to quote, at the end of the day. What does that mean in the big picture of this team? This team doesn't have isn't looking to Band-Aid their way and sneak in the playoffs, because they will get exposed there.
Okay,
in the play.
Well,
so
but,
I mean,
but
to
Paul,
me,
it,
is this
this, well,
this is a fatal this is a fatal flaw in this team.
It is. But you
in
but
regards you, to any playoff run hopes.
Agreed, and I completely
period.
Agree with that. But the first thing you have to do is figure out what can you do right now, moving forward, to fix that run defense and try to get yourself to the playoffs. I mean, heaven forbid if you don't make the playoffs, then all of a sudden all hell's going to break loose. So you better find a way to at least do that part of the equation. And if that's what it requires you to do, of getting more guys down in the box, getting more guys at the line of scrimmage, and basically saying, hey, you can see what we're going to do. If you want to check out of it and throw the ball, good luck to you. We'll give up a big player, too. I know they don't want to do that. I think they want teams to have to drive the ball on them. And guess what they're doing right now? They're driving the ball on them pretty effectively.
Without resistance.
I mean, the longest run yesterday for Indy. I mean, they averaged, this is almost stunning. They averaged 5 yards a carry, Paul. 5 yards per carry, which by NFL standards is absurd. 4 yards is a kind of a benchmark either way. If you rush for 4 yards, you've done pretty good. If you hold a team to 4 yards, you've done pretty good. Anything above that offensively is great. Anything below that defensively is great. 5.0 is an epic mark that you just go, oh, that's a
not
problem.
Good.
And sometimes it can be skewed, a la 89-yard Gio Bernard run last week, skewed the whole running stat stuff. Yesterday, their longest run was 15 yards. It was 6 here and 4 there and 5 there and 7 there and 5 there and 6 there. And they weren't just gashing them for a yard and then 12 yards. They were gashing them for 5, 6 yards a pop every time.
If there is no bigger indictment in all of football to how bad your run defense is than if Trent Richardson can gash you.
I knew where you were going.
Yeah, I mean, if Trent Richardson is tearing you up.
Run some of these numbers.
Here, I have to.
This is just amazing, because you and I both have a disdain for his ability or inability or whatever.
I think it's fairly apparent. I mean, so last year, going back to the beginning of last season, even with Cleveland, and then certainly since he's been with Indianapolis, which is over a year now of games, he has not averaged in any game better than 4.1 yards per carry.
Okay, so not average, you said.
He's never crossed over the 4.1 plateau until yesterday.
Thank you.
5.5 yards per carry. 14
with the longest
for 77.
Run, with the longest run. Not when you look at that 14 for 77 and he popped a 37-yarder and was 13 for 30 on the other carries. Mm-hmm. No. His longest run was 11 yards. So I'll take that out of the equation for you if I can. So that's still 13 for 66, which is still over 5 yards per carry. It's 5.1 a carry. For a guy that doesn't have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
Obviously well documented by what you just documented.
Yep, double documentation.
Double documented that, yes.
Well,
and you may have a PDF on it as well.
I mean, just he's a walking indictment on you. He is just, if Trent Richardson,
that's the guy.
That's the guy.
How bad your run defense? Our run defense is so bad it allowed Trent Richardson too, and whatever. Yes. That's it.
To do really anything favorable would be. I mean, it's beyond. It's beyond repair.
But you have to. You can't. And you're right in what you say. But if you're the coaching staff, you can't. You have to figure out something. You can't just say play your gap better, get off blocks,
run,
knock
fits.
Back the stacks. Give me the knock back the stacks. Whatever that was from Marvin Lewis.
Marvin Lewis's explanation today. Don't know. And that's fine if that's like the jargon that you use. I've never heard him say that ever before.
Don't fall for an extra yard is what he said. Well, yeah, they're falling for extra yards.
Yeah, they're running for a lot of extra yards before they fall as well. I mean, you know, and it's not getting better. Here's the question that we have to go into that. Is there anybody getting healthy? I mean, okay, Brandon Thompson, Perfect, Maluga, Lemieux, all these guys are a part of the equation, but they were giving up lots of yards on the ground with those
Absolutely.
Guys. So I just don't see that anybody's, Perry ain't walking through that door.
To some degree, you either do something different schematically, and I'll leave it at this. You either do something different schematically, or you continue to cross your fingers that Perfect gets healthier and is more active in the run game, and that Atkins, little by little, gets back to being Geno Atkins. Maybe not as a pass rusher, but at least as a run stopper.
What happened here? I mean, this defense the last couple of years was fantastic at stopping the run. Really at everything, but at stopping the run. So what happened?
I think it starts with, honestly, I think the whole thing, and we're going to get to this on offense. This will tell you how in this league sometimes one guy can make a huge difference in a trickle-down circumstance. The fact that Geno Atkins isn't Geno Atkins, not the all-pro level, maybe pseudo Hall of Fame level guy, has trickled down to everything else that they are unable to do. He allowed you to do so much defensively that it made Mike Zimmer look brilliant, and he was obviously a very good coach. And I think Gunther's a good coach. But this one guy now, because we watched a bunch yesterday, Paul, I had a glass. I mean, they're not doubling him very often. I mean, occasionally because of the way maybe they have to slide it or the way a run's has to be blocked at the point of attack. It's a lot of single blocking on the guy, man, and he just doesn't get off blocks.
I mean, here's the thing. You didn't have Geno Atkins at the end of last year, and if you go through...
Give me the opponents.
Average gain per rush at the end of last year, after Geno Atkins was gone, at Baltimore, 2.8. Cleveland had 5.4. At San Diego, 3.8.
Yeah, but San Diego was not a good running team last year either. I mean, Ryan Matthews was an average player.
Indianapolis was 5.3. Pittsburgh,
again, Trent Richardson factor comes back into play.
With 5.3.
Well, but that was also, when that was the 42-28 game, was it not?
It was.
And it kind of got... It was
a lot of stuff at the end.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh was 2.9. Minnesota was 6.8, but that was helped out by Cordarrelle Patterson breaking some...
Yeah, but Pittsburgh was horrible running the ball last year.
Yeah, 2.9, and Baltimore was 3.4. I mean, it's not like...
I think you can almost explain some of that away, Paul.
Geno Atkins is fantastic, but he's certainly more on the pass-rushing side of what he does well as a defensive tackle than on the run stopping
side. Did James Harrison
side.
Make that kind of a difference, you think?
No, he was hardly even playing that many snaps.
And that's what I'm wondering. I mean,
that's it. I don't know the difference. I mean, do you direct back to the... I don't know that it's that big of a difference. I think there's...
And 55 is not healthy. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
Perfect is not healthy. I mean, the guy knocks himself out of every... He's literally played four games, knocked himself out of four games.
He has. He hasn't had one game where he hasn't knocked himself out.
Correct. So, you know that. The guy, when he's healthy, is a difference maker, too.
No doubt.
So, you're talking two all-pro, not Pro Bowl level, because a lot of guys make the Pro Bowl. Two all-pro level players aren't close to what they were.
Yeah.
I know that sounds easy and simplistic, but they're not.
But in the past, guys have gone out and the depth has come in and made plays. But what, like last year when Maluga goes out and Vinny Ray plays great.
And he played very well.
Or when Geno went out and they didn't seem to miss
And Vinny had 16 tackles yesterday, but it's a little...
Yeah, but I mean...
He did not play great.
But this isn't about those guys. This is about injuries happening and what we talked about before the season. I thought the depth of this team mm-hmm. had taken a nick.
Yep.
With the loss of guys like Michael Johnson and the loss of guys like Anthony Collins that guys that contributed, then all of a sudden a few others come up, and another group have to come up below them.
And Margus Hunt can't get on the field very
Margus
often.
Hunt has, when he, and he really hasn't, I mean, he hasn't flashed even a bit, even when he's on there. You haven't seen anything. You know, you got these three other linebackers in there now that are supposed to, when you're in your second year, you're supposed to be getting better and starting to contribute a little bit. I mean,
And Marquise Flowers was lost.
Marquise Flowers was lost. Jason Demonch was moved around, yep. Pushed around. I mean,
and your two safeties are fine. They're not prototypical. They're just not that prototypical big strong safety anymore. They're not walk down in the box and sticky guys. They'll hit you in space, but yeah. they're not that kind of safeties either. So that factors in.
Yeah, I mean the last people that I would even be the secondary.
Yeah, no.
It's this front seven that's just killing them.
It's the front middle two that's killing them.
The front middle two in particular are killing them. Yeah, no doubt. And you know they're just not. They're used to running a deep rotation in there on the line, and they're unable to do it.
Right.
Partially because of injury. Devin Still, for how great his story is a disaster in there.
He gets pushed around like
he gets pushed around too, and they need a big house in the middle that can hold it down, and they just don't have it. And to me, like I said earlier, fatal flaw on this team.
Yeah, I agree.
Fatal flaw, because there's no answer now. But,
and that's the thing. I like pointing out flaws. I always like to try to point out an answer. And to me, I'm not sure what
that's the problem. And I don't have a problem with flaws. Every team in the NFL right now has flaws.
What is your answer?
But it's how can they fix them? They have ways to fix them. Unless they find some magic potion to fix this run
defense. Line up and run blitz on every down.
I mean, they're going to have to do more of it.
Yep.
You're going to have to take chances elsewhere. Listen, if you like the way your corners are playing, if you think
trust them,
then you have to. Mm-hmm. You have almost no choice at this point. Yep. That you need to start being more aggressive. And you know what? If they're going to burn you, they're going to burn you. So be it. But you've got to make other teams make that decision. All right. So that's. Oh, by the way, that's the team that didn't. That's the part of the ball that actually played better
played
yesterday.
Okay. Yeah, they kind of kept you in the game for a little bit.
Kind of kept you in the game because the offense is the media's fault, as everybody knows.
Yes,
you know everything that goes wrong now is the media's fault. We learned that last.
Yeah, but
week.
You know it's funny. Nobody's blaming the media for yesterday's offensive woes.
Yeah, they are. They blame me. I got a couple tweets because I wrote about
Magic. Yeah, it is your fault.
I wrote about Hugh Jackson and the magic he's doing with everybody.
You know what his magic was? And I like you. And you do, too.
Yeah.
I like you a lot. You know what his magic was? It's called the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, they are magical. I mean, there's a magically lot of people tearing brutal. Them up. Yeah, I mean, in regards to the offense, I wouldn't be as concerned about the offense as I am about the defense. Even though they were generationally brutal yesterday,
and it goes. This is the part of it too. Is you know I'm pointing out the two guys on defense missing AJ Green. You can get away with that against Carolina. I mean, you saw yesterday what a really good quarterback and two really good wide receivers did to Carolina. I mean, they torched them for 38 points by the 5 minute mark of the third quarter.
Yeah,
you know the Bengals did. They got 500 yards against them, but they weren't even capable of doing that. I mean, that's how bad epically Carolina's just a horrible defense. But when you play a good defense, and I don't think Indy's great, but they're good, and they've been very good this year.
Getting
teams in tough down and distant circumstances and then absolutely locking them down on third downs, part because they're half the time facing third and longs, and that's great. They challenged the Bengals at the line of scrimmage. They did put a bunch of people up at the line, and they told them one of two things. Either we're coming with a blitz if you're throwing the football, sometimes backing out, or we're going to put six or seven here and try to block them up in the running game. You're not going to be able to do it. And we're going to put the corner on 12. Safety's going to help a little bit. And we're going to put two other people. We're going to put Fred the Popcorn Salesman and Joe the Beer Guy on 11 and 19, and we'll be fine.
Yeah,
and that's what
they were.
I mean, Paul, how many times yesterday, from our vantage point up somewhere close to the moon,
usually,
you know, I put the field glasses on. I know you do, too, on almost every play, no matter where we are. And you could, even with the field glasses, we were so high up, you could see both the quarterback dropping and passes developing, and there was just nobody open.
No.
Ever. Never, no. Ever, ever.
No. There was no. They were caught in a perfect storm of game plan and not having anybody to turn to.
And not having personnel.
They just didn't have anybody to turn to. You know, they have – you're trying to run Brandon Tate and James Wright and Dane Sonsenbacher out there against guys that they can't get open. And then more importantly, they had nobody that could stretch the field outside of Mohamed Sanu, and they accounted for that.
And that's the part of it, too. And
they sat on those little screens.
Well, I had some people ask me, well, why did you take some shots down the field? Well, part of it is they were playing so much man coverage and blitzing a lot of times, you can't throw a lot of stuff down the field. I mean, you don't have time to go five-step drop, seven-step drop, because you're going to get sacked. So Hugh Jackson, is the game went. I mean, he was trying to get it out of Andy's hands quick. They were trying to run the screen game, and to their credit, they would show blitz in a certain spot, drop another guy off into the blitz area, shut into the screen area, shut the screen game down. There was nowhere to turn. And you can argue, run the ball more. You couldn't. They
didn't.
They weren't getting anything. Right. You can look and go, well, they only ran it 12 times. Run it more. I'm all about running it more. If you're running it effectively, there was no place to run. You got 5 and 6 guys blocking 7 and 8 guys. Guess what? That leaves 1 or 2 unaccounted for. And, yeah, they didn't block it up all that well sometimes. But when you got a guy or two running free to make tackles, there you go. The way to beat that is saying, okay, we've got 18 on one side, 12 on the other. You want to do that? I got one of these guys manned up. I'm going to throw it down the field to them. Yeah. That's the way you beat that. You just don't have 18 right now.
Yeah, that's a spot that they're in. I want to bring Hugh Jackson in because I want to talk a little bit about what he had to say about not only his challenge as a play caller on Sunday, but also just about how they kind of go forward and the idea of this being an anomaly versus being a trend. So here's some time, myself, a couple other reporters, talking with Hugh Jackson Monday at Paul Brown Stadium.
Was that one of those games where you keep going back and to a different part of the playbook and try to find something new and just couldn't get any momentum? Was that the biggest thing, no momentum?
It felt like that. Yeah. I mean, but more so than that, like I always tell you guys, at the end of the day, I have to go back and take a good look at me and make sure you're giving the players a chance to have success. Now, at the end of the day, it's my responsibility. And, when I look at it, we didn't play as well as I think we can, you know, and it's my job to make sure that that we do that week in and week out. We can't have a week like that because that's not who we are. It's not who we've been. So we got to, you know, go back and go to practice, go look at this, have our guys look at it very thoroughly, and then go from there and get better.
When you kind of step back and think about your day and reevaluate, you, as you just said, what did you come away with?
Well, obviously, I didn't do a good enough job, you know, and but we didn't score any points. Not enough. We didn't score any points, you know, and we wasn't very good third down wise. I mean, they won in every facet of the game against us. So, again, that's not us. It's not who we are. It's not who we've become. And, again, I think it's my job to make sure that I get that squared away with our offensive unit and have them take a look at it, and then we'll go from there.
With the running game, how much of it is them loading the box and daring you to throw it, and how much of it was maybe just not getting the holes you wanted to open up?
No, I'd be the first to tell you, I think I got to call them more. You know, sometimes you just got to be stubborn enough to do it. Yeah. You know, I think, you got to give guys an opportunity. It's always easy to look back and say you could have did this, could have did that. Mm-hmm. You know, if you make a couple of those plays, you feel differently. You know, but you didn't make them. So I'm not going to continue to go down that road. The next road we need to get to is how do we get ready to beat a really good football team that I think that's coming in here that we've played before, that we have a lot of respect for, that we need to play better than what we did.
Yeah, the first four series, 12 plays, I think it was 10 pass, 2 run, which is uncharacteristic of you.
Well, if you go look at our stats, I think on first down we were probably 80% run or 75% run. So at some point in time, you got to break the who you are, and doing so, that didn't work. You know, they played us totally different. And like I said, if you look at it, there are some chances I think we had there, but we just didn't make the plays. Whatever it's worth, we didn't make them, and that's not that doesn't mean that's anybody else's fault other than we didn't get it done. And that's what I think's important.
When it comes to bouncing back from a loss like that, how big of a part is attitude, or do you need to take the emotion out of it and just look at it analytically?
It's attitude. I mean, it's a lot of it is attitude. It's mindset. It's determination. It's will. It's your foundational belief, you know, because I'm sure if you talk to any one of our players, they've never thought that was coming. They didn't see that happening. You know, I didn't either. It did. So, I mean, what are you going to do about it now? You know, one thing I know about this group, they're not going to go bury their head in the sand and say, okay, here we go. No, we're going to go to work. You know, we've rallied before and we're going to rally again because we have to. That's what we do as professionals, you know, but we have a long road ahead of us, but we understand what's at hand. So that's all you can do. You know, you go do what you do and do it better than what you've done it. And that's what we have to do. And we have done it well. There's a lot of things we've done well. I mean, heading this thing, we're one of the better offenses in the National Football League, and we walked out of here being nothing. That's why I say it's week to week in this business. One week you're okay. Next week you're either okay or you're worse, you know, and so we got worse. But we'll fix it, and we'll move forward.
Everybody stays calm, and, you know, it's early, so there's no freak out. Mm-hmm. But where is that fine line of balance between a game like yesterday maybe makes you consider giving other guys more of a chance or consider shaking things up a little bit, or is that – or do you not go down that route yet after just because of one game?
Yeah,
like
I don't think you go down that route just yet. Yeah. I don't think it was just one player specific thing or one situational specific thing. It was everything. You know, it's what you guys said. Everything just kind of looked off. You know, didn't look like it was happening the way it had been happening. And again, that's my responsibility as a coach. It's our players' responsibility. You know, when it gets like that, because that's games. Normally, game will start going like that, then you get it turned, you know, or you start off really hot, then there's a little low, and you catch it back up. I mean, this thing started off not in a good way and ended not in a good way, so it just lasted throughout. I mean, and that's very uncharacteristic of who we are and who we've been. So I don't look at it and say, okay, that's who we've become or that's who we're becoming. And by no stretch of imagination, I think we can. We can point to some things that we can, you know, shore back up and get to where we need to be.
I mean, the big elephant in the room is obviously AJ and Marvin.
I'm not going to use that.
Can't do it. I mean, clearly they kind of sat on everything and dared to take some of the sounds of like as a world to be.
Can't do it, won't do it. I mean, I just don't think that's, I don't think that's really the direction to go. I mean, regardless of who's out there playing, that we all, I get paid to coach, our players get paid to play. And we get paid to win, you know. And so at the end of the day, we have to figure out how to win with who we have. And when we get any of those other guys back, we get them back. There are no excuses in this league, you know. And teams are not going to feel sorry for you because you don't have certain guys. I mean, if I was on the other side of the ball with them, I'd been feeling the same way. Let's do whatever we can to make sure we stop them. So that's what it's all about. So at the end of the day, I have to do everything I can to make sure I give us a chance to have success.
You know, Hugh is it's one of those things where from one week to the next, man, in this league, he goes from racking up Carolina or no Carolina defense being bad, racks up 513 yards one week, and then has one of the worst offensive performances in the history of the franchise the next. It's just that's the way this league goes sometimes.
And some of it is matchup related. I mean, yeah. Some of it is who do you play on a given week with what personnel do you play with? I mean, that's a big part of it. And you saw yesterday the personnel they had weren't good enough.
No, they're not. And A.J. Green, I think there's a thought that he might be back this week.
He says he's going to.
He says to teammates in a frustrated atmosphere in the locker room yesterday, I'm coming back next week. He's sick and tired of watching this. And Marvin Lewis alluded to this with us on Friday that AJ is pretty frustrated with being hurt because he's quietly more competitive than you'd ever know because of his calm demeanor outwardly, but he's not used to this. He only missed one game in his career before this year, and
an injury like this too. I mean, even for him, I'm guessing he's wondering. It's just my toe. Come on.
Yeah.
And it's more than that. We both know that because I know he'd be out there if it wasn't the case. But that's probably even more frustrating. It's not like you blew your knee out or you broke broke something. It's a toe.
Yeah, it's a toe. Shoot it up, and you got to feel that he feels like at 75% he can go out there and help this team be better, even as a decoy.
And here's exactly right. That's the thing. If you can get him on the field, even in that shape or form, you run the ball better. You instantaneously will run the ball better because teams still, they even may know it's not the guy that can probably get by you, but he might be able to get by you, so we better rotate coverage.
They have to account for it with safeties deeper, whereas safeties cheating in on the line and coming up to make plays in the run game.
Yeah, or playing just a single safety deep. I mean,
they could do that all day because they don't have to worry about anybody else. Right. I mean, he's obviously a difference maker. But Will he come? You know, we've talked a bit about his injury situation all year. I mean, I think he'll be back, if not this week, the next, I would say probably, which would be the Jacksonville game.
Or maybe you get him back this week.
Maybe you get him back this week.
You shoot the living crap out of that toe up. In fact, you cut it off if you have to, if it makes him run
this,
faster.
Because this
and
game,
you say, hey, Jacksonville, we're going to let you rest again.
Yeah, maybe.
Because then you got that short week for Cleveland coming up after that, too. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine him trying to play then three in a row with one being a short week? Maybe this is the week you get him back at all costs.
Three in about 17 days, three in about 18 days. So, yeah, I mean, that's this week is turning out to be a very early crossroads game for
this team.
Because you now have a Baltimore team that comes in at 5-2. They're
playing very well.
Playing really well. They've passed you in first place, and you are reeling, and you're trying to find ways to stop the hemorrhaging in your own house. This is one of those games where the season can really turn, in my opinion, where you can go down that bad, ugly path of finger pointing and major changes and guy frustrations boiling over, or all of a sudden, you got the big win you needed.
You got two very winnable
home games right in front of you against Jacksonville and Cleveland, and you feel like you're back on track. You've grasped control of the division by, beating Baltimore and flipping that around to now being back in first place. Although tiebreakers really significant now with the tie.
No, but you
the
have,
actual tie
but you
involved.
Have two wins over them.
But you have two wins over them. I mean, you've
2-0 in the division.
Yeah. And you have played the harder portion of the schedule compared to the other AFC North
Although
teams.
Although the last seven
point.
Are brutal, as we know.
On the road, the opponents aren't necessarily as tough.
But on the road.
Pittsburgh turns out they're not as good as you thought. So you have two against them.
I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean. Not as tough as we originally
thought.
That's
why. Here's
thought.
The funny part to all this. Before the season started, you and I actually predicted each game by game. And we even know it's a futile exercise because of what we couldn't predict AJ was going to get hurt and Vontaze was going to. I mean, you can't predict all of that. But we gave it a whirl. At this stage of the season, I had them 4-2. I had them losing actually in Baltimore and New England and winning yesterday. That was really good of me.
Yeah.
I did great there. And obviously, we both had them beating Carolina. You had them 4-2 as well. So you're not far off from where, realistically, that's where this team was going to be. 4-2 after this, I think you'd have taken it. You're a missed field goal away from being 4-2.
They are.
But it's an ugly stretch of games here the last three.
It is. It's an ugly stretch, and you've just seen things that you didn't expect to see.
Right. I'll give you
that. I thought they'd go 4-2, but I thought their losses would be close.
I know what you're saying.
I mean, to get hammered by 25-plus points twice in a three-game span.
Or your last two road games.
And the other one being a tie against what's apparently a wretched Carolina team.
Yes.
Is not I don't even know what to say about that.
It's brutal.
It's not how it was supposed to be.
And you are, and I thought about this last night. You're that AJ Green touchdown pass away in Baltimore being outscored in that half 16-0. So put that half together. 16-0 in that half, 43-17 in New England, and 27-0 yesterday. The last 2.5 football games, you have been housed on the road, man.
Yeah. 70-17 the last two games,
right.
New England and Indianapolis, and you know who are you as a team is what you have to ask.
It's funny,
this time of year, and they're clearly not amongst the best teams in the AFC, even in the conversation right now.
And you talked about those road games down the road, and that may not being as tough. You know, it's New Orleans, which is sub .500, and it's Houston, which is teetering on .500.
Tampa's
dreadful.
Bad.
But we're talking the last 2.5 games on the road. It doesn't matter if you play; they've just been dreadful. Now, granted, they're 3 playoff teams. Indy's going to be a playoff team. Baltimore's going to be fighting for being a playoff team.
I think
team.
Indy might be one of the best teams in football.
I would agree with that. And obviously, New England's going to be a playoff team. So,
yeah.
I mean, they 3 good teams on the road.
And that's what I mean. If you look at the schedule that they've gone through, they have played, actually, believe this or not, Carolina leads their division.
No, I know, right. Yes, yeah, I know.
They've
it's funny to think about.
Played
but yeah.
4 of their 6 games have been against division.
That's a legit
division
point.
Leaders right now.
Yep, that's right.
So, you know, there is something to that. You have a run of games. That's why this Baltimore game is such a huge crossroads. Because think about that. If you find a way to turn it around and win, and then you beat Jacksonville and Cleveland, two games that you, let's be honest, should be winning at home in particular. You're sitting really pretty. You may be up in the upper echelon of the playoff picture. Now, you've got a lot to go in front of you, and you still have these fatal flaws that we've talked about. However, I mean, there's ways to flip the good vibes and get on that run. We've seen it happen before. You know, 2012.
Andrew Whitworth made a point of that today.
Yeah, he did. He did. That's a good point, Skinny. You know, let's bring Whit in, because these lulls happen all the time, and it's a matter of getting through those and finding ways to turn it around, and the leaders have to be the ones that have to do that. So we talked to Andrew Whitworth about that topic and how you approach that and where this team is at in that regard. So here's Andrew Whitworth from the locker room on Monday.
Well, you're kind of talking about confidence. Do you sense that confidence is still strong with everybody, even after a stretch like that?
Well, I mean, your confidence is always going to dictate how the game went. So, I mean, if you're not winning, you're not going to be a very confident football team. But that's why I said, I mean, you really get to find out who's tough, because the truth is the kind of confidence you have when you're struggling is in who you are and in what you're about. And so, you know, the guys that are willing to do whatever it takes, you know, effort-wise, time in the building-wise, you know, helping guys maybe younger than them that need some guidance, you know, that the extra time, that's going to really show us who on this team's committed and who on this team wants it enough for us to win.
Do you have to – is one of the things at a time like this, do you make sure you keep – any finger pointing squashed and make sure everybody just stays on board and doesn't try to dive off a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's just important for us to stay together and be a team. And the only way that you do that is to continue to stay in this building and fight together. And so that's what I mean. You just don't want to have anybody pulling away. And I don't think we have that. I think we have guys that are committed, and it's going to be finding a way. I mean, I've been here long enough to have been through times when we had decimated injuries. I've been through times when we've, you know, just trying to find identity. I mean, I know about that. So it's important for the leadership of this team, greater than any other time, to help guide this team to, you know, I guess from where we're at to back to where we think we should be. And so that's going to be important for us, to figure out a way to make us successful. And whatever that looks like, we got to push for it.
Is that a thing where you stand up in front of the team at a meeting or after a game? Or is it a by example thing? Or
No, I mean, I think it's just it's an overall picture thing. It's not just a, you know, I think too much is made of guys standing up in a meeting. A lot of the time, to me, I think that comes more off as one guy entitling himself like he's not the problem. I mean, you know, it's going to be more about us putting away whether we think we play good or don't play good, and saying, how can I make the whole entire team better? And, you know, whatever we can do to find a way to make us all better, that's what we need. And so that's why I say it's important for all the leadership to find a way to lead this team to better places than where we are right now.
Has that happened yet? Will it happen?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. It's going to happen. I mean, you know, you don't make excuses. We've been pretty beat up with injuries, and so we're finding guys that are in there that we weren't sure were going to be in there. And so now it takes, hey, you got to guide this guy, you got to lead this guy. And so it's you know, it's a different thing. And so it takes, you know, the NFL seasons are about highs and lows. I mean, they are. Every playoff stretch we've had so far, there's been a lull somewhere in the season, and we've had to regroup and find a way to win, and this will be no different. So if we want to go to the playoffs, we've had a little bad stretch, and we got to go on a good one. We got to win 3, 4, 5 in a row.
I thought that was interesting, and you know, I
know fans don't want to hear that. They don't.
No.
I mean, I know they don't, but I think it was an honest answer, and I think I think he's right. I absolutely agree with him.
When you look back at the last few years, this team, I mean, he's right. There have been these lulls every single year. Okay, so let's go. If you go back to last year, they had the stretch when they went to Miami on Halloween and Geno Atkins gets hurt and they lose in overtime on a safety. And they go to Baltimore and they play like complete garbage. You know, they had a Hail Mary that almost got them a miracle win. Okay, and everyone's saying, "Oh,
he made
the season's
a point of
falling
apart." What he says, I think we got 40 yards on 52 pass plays.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much, because that's what it was. Because the most of their yards they made up were on the Hail Mary and one broken coverage on a 3-yard out. And so, you know, you had that time, and then they ended up rebounding and winning five of their last six going into the playoffs. Now, didn't really do anything, and they sucked in the playoffs. You all know that.
Yeah, but the point is, the ship got righted like that.
You can go from everything's falling apart to everything's coming together real quick. 2012, I specifically remember this moment where going into the home game against the Giants, the Bengals had lost four in a row. They were 3-5 to start the season. And everyone was talking about how Marvin Lewis is going to get fired, yep. And this season is about to spiral completely out of control. And they absolutely housed their next four opponents. They won seven of their final eight and went on a run that took them right into the playoffs. I mean, that's the most. They lost four in a row and then won seven of eight.
Yep.
And they went from the bottom all the way to the top, as Drake would say. And so 2011... I mean, that was an up and down season to say the least. They had a lull where they lost four or five at one point, and still found a way to make the playoffs.
Yep.
I mean, this happens. You got to get on runs. You got to go on winning streaks. They had a small one at the beginning of the year,
and then the bye hit them, and then the injuries hit them, and here you are.
And outside of getting lucky and there not being another string of injuries, more injuries are going to come. Okay, and that's my thing, is the depth of this team is not where it has been.
The only thing I disagree with you on is this, a little bit. I don't completely, but I would ask you this. You take Demaryius Thomas, the other Thomas, the tight end. Julius Thomas, and Emmanuel Sanders away from Peyton Manning. Does he really do what he does?
Yes.
Now come on.
Remember, we made Austin Collie great.
Tammy, Bug Eyes Caldwell, and whoever long haired number 19 was I saw last night. Come on.
Peyton Manning could maybe not exactly what he do, but
no,
they still winning plenty
of games.
Not even
close to exactly. Still be in some games.
Peyton
Manning
has run up a lot of big stats with a lot of nobodies. Remember Anthony Gonzalez and Austin Collie?
I do. I also remember Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne for some of that too.
Yeah, but he put a big number.
For a good chunk of that.
That's fine. That's fine. But he makes a lot of guys great as well.
Dude, Hall of Fame quarterback. I'm not going to lie to you.
Why do you got to throw Bug Eyes Caldwell under the under the bus here?
You take those three guys out of the mix, he doesn't put up the same numbers. Doesn't even come close to putting up the same numbers. It would affect their offense greatly.
Yeah.
Greatly. You've taken Marvin Jones, Eifert, and A.J. Green out of this offense, and you've got to expect against a good team and against any good teams, it's going to affect you greatly.
Andre Caldwell used to wear these panda slippers.
Andre Caldwell. This is Andre Caldwell.
The 2010 training camp, he showed up, and everybody, when they show up at camp, usually will just talk to media as soon as they show up, and he was wearing these giant panda slippers. They were just giant panda heads.
Did he have a reason why?
Super oversized.
Comfy?
I assume they looked very comfortable. But I mean, it was.
They looked very effeminate. It sounds like.
No, they looked very comfortable. He was just a weird dude. Anyway, I'm sorry. You mentioned Andre Caldwell.
My brain just flies off
into a weird direction. You know what? I'm happy you mentioned Tyler Eifert because I want to talk about something that came up before the game on Sunday, which was this idea that Jermaine Gresham is going to be possibly traded, okay, which was slapped against the wall by Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, who I like Ian and have a lot of respect for what he says. But this was clearly I'm just looking around at guys getting healthy and guys that are in the last years of their contracts, which were a similar situation to Percy Harvin, which is what sparked this. So who else? So the idea was Percy Harvin got traded. Who else is in a similar Percy Harvin-like situation that's in the last year of a contract that maybe would be traded like this? So, and Jermaine Gresham was one of the people thrown against the wall. No, first of all, I'll just start with that. Absolutely freaking not. Is this
you and I tag team a story before the game about how illogical that is. I'm a big logic guy. I may not always be right, but I like to at least try to induce the logic of it is so far out there. It's not funny. Eifert doesn't get back until the Cleveland game, November the 6th. So you'd at least have to play a game without him. And yes, I know it's the Jacksonville game, but you'd have to play a game without him.
And we still don't know that Eifert will be back for that game.
And that's correct, too. That's an overriding point to all this. But you would have at least have had to play one game without really you'd have Kevin Brock and Ryan Hewitt at tight end. I know it's Jacksonville, and you can argue.
You already don't have weapons.
Exactly. the other part to it being that you know, I know you talked to a source, and the point was that you know, really the Bengals weren't even mentioned in the Percy Harvin trade. The Bengals are in need of a wide receiver, kind of to some degree desperate.
And if Seattle's the one in need of a tight end, then certainly they would, if there was any kind of match, they'd have been in there.
There's your perfect partner. The fact that Eifert doesn't stay healthy very often. I mean, he's had some issues here of late. The fact that Hugh Jackson wanted, before the season started, to run a bunch of two tight end sets. He did that in the first game, in the first eight plays of the first game, or whatever it was. Yeah. In the first handful of plays, he ran the two tight end sets, and Tyler Eifert was spectacular. He doesn't want Tyler Eifert to be the run-blocking point of attack tight end. He wants him to be the on the wing, in the slot, in motion
tight end. And Tyler Eifert
is
not as good as Tyler Eifert can be without Jermaine Gresham as the more powerful guy on the other side.
And Kevin Brock isn't that guy, and Ryan Hewitt isn't that guy. No. That guy may come in next year's draft. But it doesn't mean you're trading Jermaine Gresham in the next week. 28th is the deadline. Completely illogical.
And oh, by the way, what is Jermaine Gresham's value?
That's the other part.
Rent a mediocre player? What do you think you're going to get?
10 catches for 48 yards.
No, what do you think you're going to get if you're the Bengals in return?
You're getting next to nothing.
We initially said, maybe you'd get a fifth round. You wouldn't get a fifth round pick.
You get a
guy with a penchant for penalties.
You'd get a conditional, and the conditional would probably max out at a fifth round pick.
Yeah.
If he met huge criteria, bing, 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 this number of catches, this number of yards, this number of touchdowns, this level of the playoffs, the conditions would be off the charts.
Yeah. And there's no value in it at all.
Illogical.
In a contract year. The only thing is, they're saying, we're going to let him walk anyway, so you want to get something for him. But his value is in actually being a part of this team, not in becoming a sixth-round draft pick.
And he may find out that he goes and tests the market. Market isn't very good, and the Bengals actually get him back. I mean, there's no guarantee they draft another tight end next year to replace him. It may just be, let's see what his value is. If we can get him back at our price, we'll get him back at our price.
The only thing that would make sense with this on any level, and is probably where the report stemmed from, and which I would believe, is that he created a problems in the locker room.
Percy Harvin.
Like Percy Harvin did. Jermaine doesn't talk to us very often.
But he seems well liked by teammates. I mean,
liked by teammates.
Yeah. I mean, they kid around with him. He kids around with them.
But you could see his act
growing thin.
Growing thin on people, maybe, particularly the core leadership. Maybe, like you said, I do think he's well liked in the locker room, but maybe there is a divisive, maybe there is an anti-Jermaine and a pro-Jermaine. I just don't think he's relevant enough to really divide an entire locker room.
I would agree with that.
I mean, but anyway, and at least even the one side, if there was a divide, even the one side would realize how screwed they would be when they already don't have weapons to get rid of one that at least can potentially
Could you have seen Kevin Brock catching 10 balls yesterday?
Maybe for
4.8. Well, for 48 yards, you're right.
10 for 4.8.
Actually, Fred the popcorn salesman could have caught 10 for 40. I could have caught 10 for 48.
I mean,
you go 2 yards, turn right, turn around. Oh, okay, and then I get smashed? Yes. Okay, good.
Yes, you get smashed. Don't go breaking any tackles either while you're at
exactly.
it.
Exactly, no.
No. Let's squash that. Of course, we'll say this, and we'll...
He'll be traded tomorrow.
He'll be traded tomorrow, and then we'll have to delete this podcast forever. No, I mean, if it did happen, there would be a lot of questions that we would have.
It makes zero sense. Yes.
Anyway, so in case you heard that and you got all excited, got your all the Gresham haters got all bubbly, like JoJo, little idiot circus boy, if you got all excited, no, that's a fairly ridiculous thing to say that would happen. So while we're on this path, let's talk about Vontaze Burfict real quick, because yesterday. As you mentioned earlier, he gets knocked out of another game, and it was called a cervical strain. A cervical strain to his neck.
They did put ice on his neck on the sideline, so they did.
But he's
do
had
that.
This is now.
But let me just tell you, if you had a migraine or you had something happen to your head, that might be an area you'd put ice as well. I'm just saying that.
Yeah,
I'm not a doctor. I don't.
And they could
TV.
Be. And for all we know, there could be claims of neck injuries when it's to keep out of the protocol.
Oh, absolutely.
Which Marvin Lewis has already basically shown a disdain for.
I mean, I poked fun at it yesterday when we got out of the press conference. I said, concussion, thy name is cervical strain.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It is. It's true.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and, you know, who knows?
Paul, the guy has played four games this year and been knocked out of all four of them at some point. Now, he came back in the Carolina game after the head injury, but he's been knocked out in some way, shape, or form for a period of time in four games that he's played, and he's missed the other two. And, Paul, why did he miss the other two games?
Because of a concussion.
Thank you.
He tackles with like a flying missile with his helmet going directly into.
I've heard people say, don't they coach? Marvin even addressed that part of it last week. Yeah. Where he's talked about trying to coach the head out of football. I'm sure they do, but you know, you're in the heat of battle. That's just the way the guy plays. He's got to fix it, or he's gonna be out of football. I mean, I think that's the next step you take with him, and maybe it's a step they've already taken. But by golly, I mean, you're at the stage with him where. How much more of this can he take?
Man, everybody this team pays, gives these big extensions to, seems to get have something happen to them. I mean, Leon Hall, Vontaze Burfict, Geno Atkins, Dalton's the only one standing. Dalton and Whitworth, and Whit played all last year with basically one leg.
Right, correct.
I mean, are the only guys they've given these big extensions to that have managed to stay healthy. If I'm AJ Green, I'm taking out a million dollar, you know, $10 million
well,
insurance policy.
The thing is, they're close to trying to extend him. Obviously,
that's
too,
what I mean. He's next on the list. So you know, you gotta be. Yeah, exactly. He's got the toe situation. Who knows what will happen? I mean, it's remarkable to be honest how this happened. But the perfect thing continues to go on, and I don't know how to make heads or tails of this because
I don't either. But when he was asked if he'd play Sunday, we'll hear from Marvin Lewis. Oh, Marvin, yeah. Is he going to play Sunday? How's he doing?
How's Vontaze today?
He's fine.
He's fine.
He's fine.
He's fine. There
just
it is.
Just a blanket, he's fine.
Yeah, he's fine. Sure. No need to go into it. Like, I don't understand the
paging Dr. Lewis, Dr. Marvin Lewis.
I don't understand.
Please report to concussion protocol yourself.
What is the reluctance in even discussing this a little bit? The reluctance is what makes it look shady.
Absolutely.
So if you're telling me that you don't want to talk about this topic, it makes me assume that you're hiding something. That you are cervical straining your way through this season.
Yes.
And forcing this dude to play with or finding a way that he can play even though he's sustaining more concussions.
But here's the thing. Here's where you're kidding yourself. Here is where you're kidding yourself. If he's that much of a mess, it's not going to take much more to knock him out of another game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really not.
No. I don't know. And I don't want to sit here and say.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't. I don't want to sit here and say that there's this. We're conspiracy theorists and that we believe that this is. We don't know that that's the case. There's
no way. Nobody knows.
No,
we don't. But I know he's been knocked out of four games he's played.
And we know
year.
That they won't address it. That,
correct.
That Marvin won't talk about it. He won't even get into it. Oh, how many times we ask the question, are you concerned about perfect? All he's got to say is, of course we're concerned.
Yes.
You never want to see guys get multiple concussions, but we're going through the protocol and we're following everything the way that we can.
Pretty simple.
That's never really been said.
Maybe give him an index card that says that.
It's not like one, like a little ad read that yes. you'd have if you were doing
yes,
a game.
Exactly.
This is brought to you by, Duke Orthopedics, you know, or whatever. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't.
And to make heads or tails of it, I don't know, but I would be concerned. I think that's fair.
Absolutely.
All right. You ready to get out of here?
I am.
Yeah, I think we can get out of here. So I got to tell you, so we had the song of the game this week, which I came up with. I went old school, back to the old, like, cheerleader anthem.
I saw that.
U-G-L-Y, you ain't got no alibi, you ugly. So I thought that was a good song. I think I got a couple good recommendations from people.
Okay.
Do you have one?
I've got one for today, because you already brought it up.
I already brought it up? What were you thinking?
Well, you brought up a little Crossroads. A little Eric Clapton.
Oh, you're going to go Eric Clapton? You weren't going to go Bone Thugs?
No, that's actually a good one, too.
Maybe Bone Thugs?
That's a good one, too.
I will say, you know what? The ones that I got, I liked Whipping Post
yep.
by the Allman Brothers.
Yep.
The Whipping Post. Highway to Hell was also.
It's not quite there yet.
I-74 was Highway to Hell,
yes,
though.
It was.
I mean, it's a straight shot. They took the bus. They didn't fly this time. They went on the highway.
That's a good call.
So gotta say, I gotta.
And there was a lot of road construction on that highway, and at times I hit a pothole last night that woke us all up. It was kind of highway to hellish.
It was a that part was actually
it's not a bad call.
So yeah, I liked that one. So yeah, so I got a few good suggestions, but you know what? You're right. This is the week where it's a huge crossroads in the season this week, and Bone Thugs were just at Bogart's. Like last week.
I saw the photo gallery.
Yeah, we had a photo gallery.
On our online
product. We had a photo gallery. So let's do it. So let's bring in Bone Thugs. Let's do a little Crossroads. Because that's where we're at. So the Crossroads are showing up. Thank you, Bone Thugs. Of course, every Tuesday the podcast will come to you. So make sure you keep picking it up every single week. Make sure you get the Bengals app. You can listen to it on there. All our coverage. Home the next 3 weeks, Skinny.
Yes, we are.
So we are home. So you have to worry
and
about
And we've got some great news coming up on the show, too.
Oh, yeah, we do. So Tuesday, if you... This coming Tuesday, Andre Smith will be on the show. If you're listening to it after that, fun show. Icky Woods is going to be our guest down at Moorlight Lager House. Come down. There will be cold cuts for everyone. Get some cold cuts for everyone. I'm going to be passing out the bologna.
We're going to have some kind of contest tied to people winning cold cuts.
Yes, absolutely. So if you've got any ideas, shoot us your cold cuts ideas. We'll take them. So all right, so that's it. We're gonna get out of here, but we'll have all your coverage on Cincinnati.com. Bengals, Ravens, Sunday at 1 o'clock. And then after that, of course, podcast next week. So we'll talk to you next week.
Somebody really wrong. Everybody wanna test the stuff. And it's easy, it's easy to fall. And nobody sitting in cause the intent to know that they didn't win any. Wanna come again, again and again. Now tell me what you gonna do. Can somebody, anybody tell me why?